News, I'm Tommy McNeil. Now that U.S. President Trump has forced out Attorney General Jeff Sessions, the top law enforcement official in the country, the new acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker is expected to oversee the special counsel's Russia investigation. But what does the future hold for the Deputy Attorney General, who was in charge of the special counsel probe? AP correspondent Jackie Quinn explains.
Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein has come under fire and appeared to be on the way out in September after a published report said Rosenstein suggested recording the president and the possibility of invoking the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office, which Rosenstein has denied. But he was at the White House Wednesday, soon after Jeff Sessions' ouster was announced. White House counselor Kellyanne Conway was asked, what was that about?
Well, he is a deputy attorney general, so he has a lot of business here at the White House. I think he'll be back tomorrow for a different meeting.
Rosenstein oversaw the Russia investigation because Sessions had to recuse himself because of his contacts with Russian officials.
AP's Jackie Quinn. U.S. President Trump is boasting a very big win in Tuesday's national congressional elections. President Trump also says he's in no rush to finalize a deal with North Korea and remove sanctions. He told reporters he has made more progress with North Korea than any other administration and that he still plans another summit with Kim Jong-un early next year. Neither side gave any firm reason why the talks were postponed other than the State Department deputy spokesman Robert Paladino calling it a purely matter of scheduling.
Timing. This has to do with timing, as a matter of fact, we're talking about scheduling, and I'll leave it at that.
The talks in New York were largely seen as paving the way for a second Trump-Kim summit. The first met in Singapore in June, and announcing the new postponed meeting, the State Department said the two men would discuss making progress on all four pillars of the Singapore summit. This is VOA News. U.S. President Trump, again, boasting of a very big win in Tuesday's national congressional elections after Republicans strengthened their hold on the Senate, even as Democrats took control of the House of Representatives for the first time in 8 years, AP's Warren Levinson reports.
The House Minority Leader says Democrats in Congress will seek bipartisanship but won't be afraid to exercise their responsibility for oversight of the administration.
We believe that we have a responsibility to seek common ground where we can. Where we cannot, we must stand our ground.
Pelosi credited a focus on health care with pushing the party over the top. She stands to return to the speakership despite some grumbling that it's time for new leadership. Pelosi says she believes she's the best candidate for the job and will have the votes when the time comes to choose a speaker.
Pelosi being Nancy Pelosi. Pakistan has released a Christian woman, Asia Bibi, from a prison in the city of Multan following her acquittal on charges of blasphemy. Pakistani officials said she left the prison facility Wednesday and was flown to an undisclosed location. Officials say her whereabouts are being kept secret because of threats on her life. In a landmark ruling October 31st, Pakistan's Supreme Court overturned her 2010 conviction for insulting Islam's prophet Muhammad. The acquittal sparked 3 days of widespread protest by Islamists who demanded that Bibi's death sentence be reinstated. Facebook says that it has blocked more than 100 accounts with potential ties to so-called Russian troll farm that may have sought to interfere with Tuesday's U.S. midterm elections. The social media giant said in a statement Wednesday that it had blocked the Facebook and Instagram accounts ahead of the vote. Facebook said it made the move after a tip from law enforcement officials. Facebook's head of cybersecurity, Nathaniel Gleischer, said in a statement that the accounts were blocked late Monday over suspicions they were engaged in coordinated inauthentic behavior. Central Americans who said they will walk from their country through Mexico to the U.S. are deciding whether to continue their journey. AP correspondent Rita Foley.
They were a central issue in the midterm elections. President Trump called them an invasion. Thousands of immigrants who've walked through three countries in 3 weeks headed toward the U.S. Many say they're fleeing poverty and violence. They're in Mexico City now, where they're being offered visas. But after an arduous trip and still hundreds of miles from the U.S. border, they're taking at least a couple of days to decide what to do. Stay in Mexico or continue on to the U.S. One woman from El Salvador asked why she should continue toward the United States. "Just for them to turn me back," she said.
That's AP correspondent Rita Foley reporting. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Cameroon government says abducted students rescued yesterday are in good condition.
They are undergoing a very thorough medical examination. The conversation that I had with the governor and the people, the hospital, they say that their conditions are pretty well.
Issa Cheromag Bakary is Cameroon's information minister. A visiting UN official calls on South Sudan's government to enact child protection laws. Guinea-Bissau students are planning a protest today to demand government intervention in the ongoing teacher strike. And the CPJ calls on Tanzania's government to release two CPJ staff members.
It appears that they confiscated their passports and they were escorted away from the hotel into an unknown location. So we're very concerned about the safety of our colleagues and we are calling on the authorities to release them immediately.
Courtney Rush is advocacy director for the Committee to Protect Journalists. 47 people died yesterday, Wednesday, in a road traffic accident in Zimbabwe, and fathers' exercise impacts the health of their children. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Cameroon government says abducted students who were rescued yesterday are in good condition. Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakary says the students are undergoing a thorough medical examination. It's still not clear who abducted about 80 school children from their Presbyterian school in Bamenda. The government accused separatists seeking an independent English-speaking Cameroon for abducting the students. The separatists accused the military for kidnapping the children to blame it on the separatists. Information Minister Bakary says the rescue was made possible by the combined effort of Cameroon Defense and Security Forces as well as vigilante groups.
What I can confirm is that two students are still into the hand of secessionists, and the principal and the teacher, four people are still into the hand of the secessionists, the abductor.
So altogether, how many students have been freed?
I don't like to be wrong in communicating the figure, but let us say 78.
Mr. Minister, who freed the students? The Cameroon military or the separatists? Because the separatists told me on Monday that their forces had rescued the children. Who rescued the children?
Well, the combination of our defense and security forces, the population, the vigilante groups, combined their efforts. Then the government used the most appropriate tool in order to locate the hideout of the terrorists. And so soon as we discovered the area where they were located, our defense and security forces surrounding them, waiting until the most appropriate time to storm the area in order to free the hostages and to bring to book those who would be arrested, otherwise they would be neutralized. Because they understood that they were almost trapped by our population and our defense and security forces, they escaped with two children and the principal and a teacher.
Minister, how would you describe the condition of the children?
They are in a very satisfactory condition. They are undergoing a very thorough medical examination. The conversation that I had with the governor and the people in the hospital, they say that their conditions are pretty well.
Let me say that in my interview with the separatist spokesperson, they blamed your government, your military forces, of being responsible for abducting the children because they say you want to blame them for doing that.
For what purpose? There is no need at all. The world knows how irresponsible they are. There is no need to undertake such trickery because we want to blame them having abducted the kids. This is nonsense. They were just unable to take the children very far away from Bamenda. And they know also that this will be the hot potatoes into their own hands. To secure this and to claim ransom would be very, very difficult as the army, the population, the vigilante group, all of them were aware of the gravity of the situation. Measures taken in order to surround them and to stone the area where they were located. It is completely wrong to blame our army for having done this. This is not in our interest.
Minister, on Tuesday this week, President Paul Biya was inaugurated for the seventh time, and in his speech, he called on the separatists to lay down their arms, but at the same time, he sounded threatening. So how sincere is he when he called on the separatists to lay down their arms?
Let them lay down their arms and come back home. The head of state said that he's ready to welcome them, but in case they refuse, our army will deal with them the strongest way possible, because this chance has been offered to them to lay down their guns, come back home, and to see what can be undertaken. And I think that the speech delivered by the head of state has been a watershed. It has been the leverage which enabled the government to get our children released. The reason why I say yes, head of state asked them to give up fighting, because it will lead them nowhere. They are going to find themselves in a blind alley, which will be really jeopardizing as far as they are concerned in their strategy. That is why we are convinced that the speech delivered by the head of state is very, very sincere. He addressed to them as a father. And I think that they will seize this opportunity to lay down their guns and to come back home. And the head of state has a promise to step up the decentralization. And even he pronounced the word of to give them the opportunity to become more autonomous in the decision dealing with their day-to-day life where they are.
Mr. Minister, thank you. We are always happy to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup, Saïte, and grand plaisir. It has been always a pleasure to share with you. Thank you.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Yaoundé. The U.S.-based Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, says two of his staff members were taken from their hotel in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, on Wednesday by unknown people. The two officials, Angela Kintol, CPJ's Africa Program Coordinator, and Mutoki Mumo, the Africa representative, Courtney Rash, Advocacy Director for the Committee to Protect Journalists, says the two were taken by officers who identified themselves as working with the Tanzania Immigration Authority. She said the CPJ is concerned for the safety of Angela Kintol and Mutoki Mumo.
The Committee to Protect Journalists found out that authorities in Tanzania, it appears with the Immigration Authority, have detained Angela Kintol and Mutoki Mumo from their hotel room in Dar es Salaam. And it appears that they confiscated their passports. They would not return them when asked, and they were escorted away from the hotel into an unknown location. So we're very concerned about the safety of our colleagues, and we are calling on the authorities to release them immediately.
So could you tell me, what were they doing in Tanzania?
Sure. My colleagues were there in Tanzania to report on the press freedom situation there, to understand the environment in the country for journalists, and to strengthen CPJ's network of Tanzanian journalists, news outlets, and civil society organizations.
How did you get to know their situation? I mean, did they contact you to say what was happening?
We were contacted briefly before they were escorted away, and we no longer have contact with them.
We have not been able to reach the Tanzanian authorities, but why do you suppose they were taken?
It is beyond me to understand why the Tanzanian authorities would detain people with the Committee to Protect Journalists, who are there obviously to protect journalists and do independent reporting on what is the situation in the country. But unfortunately, we know that Tanzanian police and authorities have detained journalists and others in a crackdown that has been going on human rights and press freedom in the country for, you know, some time now. So there was a journalist detained in August. There have been numerous fines slapped on television stations for reporting on human rights abuses. There have been bans placed on newspapers and radio stations. So, you know, there are severe concerns about the press freedom environment there, but that's certainly no excuse to detain our colleagues.
So have you contacted the Tanzanian government about the whereabouts of your friends?
We are using every means that we have to find out information about their whereabouts and to secure their release. This is a developing situation right now, and so we are pursuing every means that we have, as well as trying to get in touch with the Tanzanian authorities.
Courtney, thank you very much again. So nice to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you as well.
Courtney Rash is Advocacy Director for the Committee to Protect Journalists. She was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 8th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's send shout out to listeners on all our affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. A UN Security Council official visiting South Sudan is calling on President Salva Kiir's administration to enact laws to protect children in South Sudan. The Swedish ambassador to the United Nations is leading a Security Council working group on children and armed conflict who are touring South Sudan. Wake Simon Wudu has the story from Juba.
Ambassador Cook and his team met with the first Vice President Abande Ngaye, Chief of Defense Forces General Gabriel Jok Riak, and the Inspector General of the South Sudan National Police Service, General Majak Akech Malok, along with the other officials on the issue of protecting South Sudanese children.
The impunity for violations against children have been and continues to be a problem, we believe. So we've discussed also how accountability can be improved.
Skook says the government should enact a law criminalizing sex abuses the United Nations identified as constituting grave violations against the children, the killing and maiming of children, recruitment into armed conflict, rape and abduction, the use of schools and hospitals for military operations, and the blockade of humanitarian access. Skook says all the warring parties involved in South Sudan's five-year conflict have abused children and must be held accountable.
Many of these violations need to be part of the criminal law, penal law. And in that case, the justice system should penalize and criminalize and put to justice any violator of crimes committed.
Skook also called on the army, police and wildlife officials to observe such laws and advised the government to employ competent prosecutors in both the civilian and military realms to investigate and prosecute serious conflict-related cases involving the abuse of children. And Skook reiterated the need to establish a hybrid court to try perpetrators of war-related crimes, which the UN and the African Union both support. He says warring parties must stop recruiting children into their forces and release child soldiers per the requirements of the peace agreement. Virginia Gamba, the UN Special Representative of the Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict, met similar recommendations after visiting South Sudan a month ago. Gamba reported that nearly 1,400 children have been verified as having been directly affected by South Sudan's warring parties. Armed groups have said they are committed to demobilizing child soldiers. Some 900 child soldiers were released by government and rebel groups this year after rallies staged by rights groups. But Skook says more must be done.
I believe that the peace agreement in its revitalized form is an opportunity to turn the corner and to move forward when it comes to really and truly protecting the interests of the children of South Sudan.
According to Gamba, the conflict has caused immense suffering to children. In her report, Gamba said at least 1,221 children were recruited by both government and rebel forces into armed conflict in 2017 alone. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Guinea-Bissau students are planning a protest today, Thursday, to demand government intervention in the ongoing teachers' strike. Schools have still not opened in the country, and teachers will also demonstrate over the weekend. Civil society activist Carlos De Silva tells Ricky Stryak the teachers are asking the government to address the need to pay teachers' debts that are owed and invest in career advancement for long-serving educators.
We do not know anything about the school for this year. It's still closed, and the government showing no interest to negotiate with the teachers' union and so on. And so we decided to do something, you know.
What is the issue right now? The schools have still not opened, is that correct? Is there any open date for them?
Nothing, because even yesterday, the three teachers' union decided again to do a peaceful demonstration on this coming Sunday, because they said, according to the person, that this government led by Aristide Gomes is interested in negotiating with the teachers' union. And so they decided to go on strike, because the government focused more on the election and they neglect education side. And this created a lot of billion of the teachers, you know. What does the problem go on the ground right now?
Is this teacher strike and the lack of opening of schools in Bissau, is it at all related to the fact that parliamentary elections have been postponed? They were scheduled to be held November 18th, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Is that correct?
It's not going to happen anymore. It's the representative election, because, you know, according to the schedule, it was on November 18th. But now the National Committee for Election extended the register voters until November 20th, which means that the election cannot take place anymore. And so far, there is no another appointed date. And there's some people who want to say, okay, we can just postpone by the late of this year, meaning by December. But there's some groups that think that it's better to postpone it for next year, and we can do the one general action.
What about the teacher strike? What are they asking for?
There is implementation of teachers' careers, because according to the spokesperson yesterday, he say the demand is in compliance with the stages of the teaching career and the payment of all arrears debts to teachers. Because though you work 10 years, 11 years, 20 years, and you are still gaining the same thing, you are in the same place, you cannot move forward and gain the same thing that someone that just finished 1 year ago or something like that, and it's frustrating for them. They need this career, teacher's career, to implement it. This is first demand, and then also to pay the arrears debt they had in the 7 years ago.
That was civil society activist Carlos De Silva. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bissau, Guinea-Bissau. Zimbabwe police say 47 people died yesterday, Wednesday, in a road traffic accident along the Harare-Muntari Highway. It is believed speed or reckless driving was responsible for the accident. On the line from Harare is Assistant Police Commissioner Paul Nyanti. Good morning to you, Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyanti. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Commissioner. What can you tell us about the bus accident?
Yes, we can confirm, James, that last night there was a fatal road traffic accident which occurred at the 1-kilometer along Harare-Muntari Road, where 47 people died when two buses, a Gold Cutter bus, which was going towards Mutare, and a Smart Express bus, which was going towards Harare, they had a collision at the 160-kilometer peak Harare-Muntari Road, just before the Rusape toll gate. And it is alleged that one of the buses was trying to overtake. As we speak, police and other stakeholders are still attending the accident, and the more information will be released during the course of the day.
Assistant Commissioner Nyanti, what were the road conditions like?
Mutare Road, remember, was recently resurfaced, so the road conditions are good. But we would want to find out what will happen. And it is alleged that one of the buses, or in fact, all the buses were speeding, and the one was trying to overtake. So after carrying out comprehensive inquiries, then we will release full information contact with during the course of the day.
What do you suppose Assistant Commissioner is responsible? Because some information we have is that there are sometimes many accidents sometimes in Zimbabwe. What do you think is the reason? Is that because people are speeding or what?
It is speeding. Like in this case, it is speeding. From what the criminal investigations have so far established, it is speeding. And also the issue of trying to overtake when the situation does not allow one to safely overtake.
The vehicles involved, these were what, passenger vehicles, is that right?
Yes, passenger vehicles, buses, in fact.
Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyati, thank you very much again for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
That was Zimbabwe Assistant Police Commissioner Paul Nyati speaking with us from Harare. Many people know that a woman's health, including her diet and exercise habits, can impact the health of her baby even before she gets pregnant. Many women try to shed excess weight and check with their doctors to optimize their health. But until recently, little was known about a father's diet and exercise choices. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on a study that shows that just like women, there is a link between the father's health and that of their unborn children.
Just like that, okay?
Matthew Hurt is teaching his young sons how to hit a baseball. He wants them to enjoy sports and exercising.
I want it to be just natural for them. I don't want it to be a chore, right? I want them to just want to go outside, want to be active, and enjoy life to its fullest.
A study at Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center looked at the impact of fathers' exercise habits on their offspring. Kristen Stanford is a member of Ohio State's Diabetes and Metabolism Research Center. She co-led the study. The results showed that even moderate exercise before a baby was conceived
resulted in improved metabolic health in their adult offspring. So essentially it improved their glucose metabolism, decreased body weight, and increased their insulin sensitivity.
The World Health Organization says 1 in 4 adults worldwide are dangerously inactive. That increases the risk of obesity, high blood pressure, heart disease, stroke, cancer, and diabetes. Inactivity also has social and economic consequences. The research at Ohio State was done in mice. More work needs to be done to see if it applies to people as well.
The idea would be that if you have a dad who wants to have a child, if they could exercise maybe just the month prior to conception, that would have a really dramatic effect on their child's life.
The researchers also found that exercise helped even with a poor diet. Sedentary mice fed a high-fat diet passed along negative health issues like obesity and insulin resistance. But those effects were completely reversed by exercise.
A high-fat diet, even a mild high-fat diet, in this case it was only 3 weeks, changed the profile, but exercise kind of restored it back to normal.
More work needs to be done to see if the same applies to humans. But in the animal studies, exercise for the male mouse was key to the health of his offspring. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Briefly, before we leave you a summary of Africa news, the Cameroon government says abducted students rescued yesterday are in good condition. Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari says the students are undergoing a thorough medical examination. Bakari says the rescue was made possible by the combined effort of Cameroon Defense and Security Forces, as well as vigilante groups. And that is it for this Thursday, November 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Is there a leadership deficit in Africa? Does the continent lack leaders who are compassionate about their citizens and believe in strong institutions? Host Shaka Sali returns to lead a discussion on the importance of strong leaders and strong institutions on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 2019 Voice of America calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture the beautiful byways of the United States, including magnificent photos of California's Big Sur Coast Highway, West Virginia's Highland Scenic Highway, and even the Cato All-American Road in Maine. Tune into Border Crossings and call to request a free calendar.